Hello and welcome to Social Creatures. I'm Kat Anderson, and this is the show that explores some of the most captivating success stories on social media. To kick off season three, I'm chatting to Fabiana Pacini.
Fred was playing and it was a club in South Tottenham. There was 500 people in there. They were all having fun. There was a man right next to him and he accidentally touched the on button. So the music stopped. The team and I were upstairs, and when we saw that moment happened, we literally looked at each other and we said, we got something here.
Throughout the series, we'll be talking to the brains behind some of the best accounts you know, and hopefully some that you don't know yet. And new to this season, I'm going to be chatting with influencers who've achieved staggering success on social media, who are at the top of their game, and who are setting the trends. How the heck did they do it? Together, we'll uncover the way brands, organizations, and individuals have carved out their niche in the vast landscape of social media and how you can do it too. I can't wait. Boiler Room is the world's go-to brand for electronic music, linking real-life events with premium video content. It all started in 2010 with a webcam taped to a wall, opening a keyhole into London's underground music scene. Since then, they've built a unique archive spanning over 8,000 performances by more than 5,000 artists and all across 200 cities. They support emerging artists, tell stories from the fringes, and connect local dance floors to the wider world. With over 10 million followers across their social channels, Boiler Room events bring in the finest DJs and electronic music talent from across the globe, sharing incredible shows and all while creating viral moments across social media. And 2023 saw some of their biggest growth to date. Fabiana Pacini is the Senior Global Marketing Manager at Boiler Room. Before working in the marketing world, she was a journalist focusing on music and culture, which shows her experience and passion for the kind of content that Boiler Room creates. Fabiana is a creative and data-driven marketing leader who runs the digital marketing and social media teams, as well as managing strategic partnerships with global clients like Apple, Cupra, and Pernod Ricard. As a huge Boiler Room fan myself, I cannot wait to speak with her. Well, Fabi, thank you so much for joining us today. I am so thrilled to have you with us.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
I was wondering, maybe just to kick things off, could you maybe tell us, for maybe some of the listeners who don't know what Boiler Room is, what is Boiler Room? And maybe what does your role there entail?
So Boiler Room started 15 years ago. We tend to say that it's kind of like a Netflix of music. What we do is that we just want to put a camera in front of the DJ and just show to the world really local scenes and underground music scenes, mostly for electronic music. And since 2010, we published more than 5,000 artists, been to 200 cities. I mean, we're literally everywhere around the world. And I'm the Senior Global Marketing Manager. My job is to basically making sure that our channels are growing. I'm responsible for their overall social strategy. It's a very 180 role because I'm responsible for a lot of things and lead the execution for all brand partnerships as well.
Wow, that must just be so amazing. And we can get into this a little bit more because I feel like the digital presence of Boiler Room is so synonymous with the brand.
Yeah.
I'd love to just touch on, you used to be a music journalist, is that right?
Yeah, I was. Yeah, that's how I started when I was around 17 years old. So it's quite a while ago.
Yeah, but like there's clearly a love of music here that is stitched into your career. And I'm incredibly envious about it because I'm a music fan, but I haven't been able to stitch my career around music. Can you tell me about why you're so passionate about music?
I think it might sound a little bit cliche, but I consider myself very lucky and super grateful because I kind of already knew what I wanted to do since I was 15, 14 years old. I grew up in a family that is very musical. I had an uncle that was a massive influence of my life. He used to show me Ozzy Osbourne records and Marilyn Manson since I was very, very young. It might not be the thing that you show to a 15 years old, but it really shaped who I am today. And again, I was lucky to be part of, at the time, forums, you know, which is kind of the new Discord these days. The person that was managing it saw me and saw that I was really passionate about it. And, you know, he just like, oh, I'm interviewing this person, just come along. And I did. And then from there, it kind of just naturally happened. And then I started in one magazine in Spain, which was Hip Hop Nation. That was, I don't even know if they're still going. It's 20 years ago. And then another one, it kind of just fell everything into place. So yeah, I think I'm very lucky to found, you know, a passion since I was 15 years old.
Oh, you are lucky. I'm so jealous. I can't even pretend that I can be cool about it. I would absolutely love that. But how did you find the transition from music journalism into social media? What was that like? And was it easy, or were there things that overlapped, or was it completely new skills?
It was within the same job. When I left uni, I started an internship that then became a full-time job at a magazine called Vicious in Spain. And they were specialized in electronic music. And at the time, we're talking about 7, 8 years old, which is making me a bit old now. We're talking about a really long time ago. And at the time, we didn't really know what Facebook was capable of, or, you know, there wasn't that much information about it. And so my job at the magazine was to write album reviews and do interview with artists as well. And I just went to the manager at the time and said to him, can I just give it a go on Facebook? And he trusted me and said yes. So again, it was just very naturally, and me being quite, I don't know, ambitious, or just being quite direct of what I wanted to do, and people trusted me to do a good job. So it was very, again, very natural. I never really thought that I would be ended up working with social. It kind of just naturally happened.
Mm, I love the journey from being discovered on the forums as well. So you've always been quite an online person anyway. Yeah, would that be safe to say?
Yeah. It was a very geeky moment of my life when I would literally just spend hours and hours just, you know, researching about artists. I was obsessed with hip hop, and it was literally just like, why does this sound like this? Who did it? Who invented it? Who were the first DJs and MCs and graffiti? I would spend hours and hours just watching videos and documentaries and reading books. Yeah, it was, yeah, it still is a little bit like that, obviously, but I'm getting older and, you know, we need to work and do other things as well.
Well, I think you're doing yourself a disservice to say it was geeky, because I think hip hop culture is anything but geeky. And yeah, I think it's passion, which I completely love. But when we talk about Boiler Room, for me personally, as a longtime fan of Boiler Room, I feel like it is so synonymous with club culture, which again is kind of different from hip hop culture, but it's also just so super duper cool. I think it's incredibly cool. Can you tell us about how you got your job there and what attracted you to that kind of space?
Before I moved to London, which was 7 years ago, I think Boiler Room was also part of the culture that I was around it. The magazine that I work for was also within electronic music. So it kind of just, Boiler Room for anyone that applied for a job there is kind of this utopian, or, you know, it's the job that you really want because it's so cool. And mm-hmm. Look at all the things that we do. And we go to so many places around the world. Everyone that loves music and wants a career in music, I'll bet you that they have Boiler Room in their kind of list of, this is the place that I would like, love to work on. And that's what I did. They were hiring for freelancers, and I applied. And 3 months later, they offered me a full-time job and stayed. And it's been almost 5 years now.
Amazing. And they are pretty unique on the scene. You've mentioned about how it kind of started out with putting a webcam in front of a DJ and just sort of recording the sessions. But obviously Boiler Room has exploded since then, and particularly in the last few years. Can you tell us a little bit about what does the social media presence look like for Boiler Room right now, and what's so unique about it?
I think there's multiple factors. I think we were, you know, before short form content was a thing, we were already doing that. The main way that we advertise our sets on YouTube, which is your end destination, is by cutting very snappy 15 to 30 seconds videos. And those are, you know, they need to explode. They need to show a feeling to the people that are watching it. The audience needs to feel like they want to be there, or they're missing out on a gig or on a set or clubbing scene or whatever. So I think that's the main thing that we did, and we still do really well. And there's also a factor of discovery within everything that we do. I think Boiler Room caters for a lot of different audiences. It could be that you like techno, or you could like I'm a piano, or maybe you like, I don't know, tech house or trance. it caters for everyone. There is a space for everyone within our channels. So I think that's why people are so attracted to it. And also the feeling that we shared, it's open for everyone. Everyone can come to a party. We don't discriminate. And it's just a safe space for club spaces as well, which is incredibly important.
I would love to zoom in just a little bit on what you were saying there about capturing the feeling of these gigs. Because as, again, someone who goes regularly to music festivals and gigs, I always try to film a little bit of the moment, you know, when you're like, wow, this is amazing. And everything I film is complete rubbish that can't be used. And so I think there's a real art in capturing these moments. Is that something you think your team have developed? Or, you know, it's so good at these gigs that it's easy to capture that?
Yeah, so we have a really incredibly talented broadcast team. Every show that we have, there is a production meeting and we think about the surroundings, you know, where the DJ booth is going to be, how are we going to capture that moment? And obviously, I think the audience around the DJs is also something that makes Boiler Room, Boiler Room. If you watch anywhere else, usually the DJ is elevated or in a stage. We put the DJ in the middle, in the round, surrounded by the people that makes the DJ who he is, which is the audience and the fans, which is something else that we champion as well.
And that is pretty unique, I think.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't seen any other electronic music or music accounts that are really doing that. And I wonder, just on that point, you know, there are lots of other accounts out there that follow DJs. There are a lot of accounts out there that are passionate about music, but Boiler Room is really a standout. How do you think you've been so successful as positioning yourself as this go-to location for electronic music?
The programming, again, it's the main thing. I think it caters for a lot of people, like I said, but also I think the fact that we go to places where nobody else goes. We did broadcast in Pakistan. We went to Uzbekistan, South Africa. We are doing a series with the Pacific Islands that's going to be broadcasted soon. So we really dive in into small and grassroots sounds and we try to, you know, give them a platform for them to become global. And it's very, very heavily curated. And all we want to do is to elevate those small artists that I think they wouldn't have the opportunity to be in a platform that has 11 million followers if it wasn't that we would go to those places and make sure that they all have a voice and a space within socials, which I think these days is very, very hard to cut through. And I think that's why people keep coming back, because they know that what we do is we care a lot as well. Like everyone in the company, we care so much about music and so much about the artists and supporting them all the way through. You know, you have big moments like the Honey Dijon and the Solomon, but last year we had, you know, DJs where their career blew up because of their Boiler Room sets. Fred again is an example. You know, that was a huge, huge moment.
Yeah.
I would say that the strategy obviously is very important, but I do believe that Boiler Room sells more than just, you know, content. I think it's a feeling and a kind of, it's you wanted to see yourself with your mates having fun, but also discovering new music.
Yeah, I think that combination is pretty intoxicating, isn't it? Like you are passionate about what you're doing and that is really important. You know, I think a lot of people know there's a lot of places that exist in the music industry that are really just trying to make money, but you're trying to support grassroots music. You're trying to give a platform to these artists. I absolutely love that you're going to locations where maybe other people don't go, because my goodness, if there's one way to guarantee that you're going to get an enthusiastic audience, it's to go somewhere where other people don't go. It's a really, really fantastic combination of individual factors, I think, that make Boiler Room so unique and successful. But I wonder, is it difficult to maintain this position on the throne, if you will, because there is a lot that goes into it. And I wonder, do you have to adapt quite a lot as well to changes in the music market?
Yeah, we do. I mean, because we go to so many markets, we do have to have a different strategy for each one of them. You know, it might be that we did a campaign a few years ago, we went to Luanda and it was our first time there.
Wow.
I have to work really hard for a few months to understand how the audience work there, how, you know, were they using Facebook or Instagram or TikTok, or was it more posters on the street? And we found out that you could actually get a similar to a Deliveroo driver to come to you and deliver the ticket to you, which I've never seen anything like that before. But it was so fun to work on it because it was marketing that I didn't really knew that it was out there. So we did also a radio advert. So we do a lot of research before we go to a market, and we have to adapt our social strategy to really narrow it down where the audience is. We don't want to distribute content just for the sake of it. We really want to narrow it down to these people that would love the music that we're bringing to Luanda. I think also it's very important that we don't lose our values, because, you know, Boiler Room has always been underground and he always will be. So we just need to make sure that we don't, again, turning around a lot of content and make sure that we have the quality that we always had. So that's difficult to maintain. But I think we do a really good job and just making sure that we have the right talent, that we're distributing the right channels. But yeah, it's difficult, especially with new platforms landing like TikTok or, you know, Discord. It's kind of hard to adapt to everything. But the team is amazing and we have a lot of support from senior management. So yeah.
I love that. And that is definitely something that, you know, this is the third season of Social Creatures. We've definitely found that getting that buy-in from senior management is just so crucial to get that support for adapting your social strategy and properly, you know, investing in it and thinking about it to the degree that you should do. And it's so inspiring to hear that, you know, for each market, you're thinking about a different strategy and the different tactics you can use. And like, it's kind of crazy that, you know, for something that is primarily a digital product, you're looking at, you know, more traditional methods like radio ads and, you know, postering and things like that. So I think it's fabulous. You probably won't like what I'm going to ask now, given that, you know, we've just said that it's always going to be underground. But there's, you know, remind me how many followers you have now on your different channels.
Oh, we just passed the threshold of 2 million on Instagram, which was great. We had another 3 million on YouTube, almost 1 million on TikTok. So everything's around almost 11 million followers, which is a lot of responsibility.
So I don't want to point out that 11 million followers, it's safe to say, whilst I understand that the heart and soul is underground, it has become more popular and maybe mainstream over the years. And I think especially last year, there was a lot of momentum, and you've mentioned the Fred Again campaign, but maybe you could tell us from your perspective, did you do anything fundamentally different, or what were the tactics that you used to propel into these numbers and this level of growth?
There's a couple of things that happened between COVID and last year. The amount of content that we had at COVID was insane. There was only two of us and we were releasing probably 60 sets per month or something like that, which is really heavy. Wow. Yeah, it was a very busy period. But since last year, almost a year before, we completely changed the strategy from live stream to use pre-record. So Boiler Room has always been live at the same time as the event was happening. So if we had a party in London that it was going from 10 p.m. until 2 p.m., our YouTube channel would be live from 10 p.m. to 2 p.m. to 2 a.m., sorry. We've realized with that, you know, people are not really online at that time watching that set. You know, you'd be in bed or it wasn't giving the return that we actually wanted for our channel and from a resource perspective. So that was a huge shift that happened almost a year and a half ago. So now we record everything. It goes back to a broadcast team. We make sure that the audio is perfect, that the video is perfect. And then we worked on each show on a different release. So it's very similar to any marketing campaign or even like a album release or a track release. We work with the artists very closely. We work with the labels very closely to make sure that the content that is going out is, you know, really, really high standards, because it will stay there forever. That set will always be there.
Yeah.
And the fact that now every single piece of content looks on high quality, I think it's beneficial to the artist, but also to the Boiler Room as a brand. And just by making that shift, we saw a huge increase on live views, for example. We used to have, I remember being awake at, you know, 1 a.m. just to check that everything was doing well. And you might have 50 people watching it live. We've changed the strategy and now all sets will be going live from 2 p.m. UK time and they go live within the same days of the week. So it's Wednesday and Thursday. I think that helped. There was multiple factors. So we gained two audiences. So we gained the audience that was on the ground and they wanted to see themselves having fun with their mates. But we also gained the audience that wasn't able to be there, but wanted to watch it.
Yeah.
And YouTube will favorite videos that have really high live views rather than the ones that don't have it. So that 24-hour cycle is really, really important to us. Yeah, it was a huge change. I think Fred again had more than 2,000 people watching it live. Denny Salter, Marlon, Sarah Landry, Chasen Stader, Sugar Babes. The combination between the programming being so strong and the fact that we were working really close with artists to get those campaigns up, I think that's why our channels grow so, so fast in the past 2 years. So it was multiple factors and also a lot of hard work in the backstage as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's so interesting just to think about that switch. You know, that makes so much sense to switch from a live stream where 50 people are watching it at 2 a.m. in the morning and you're sitting up like panicking if that's going to be all right, you know, versus making sure, doing that quality assurance, doing that check, making sure everything's okay, and then putting it out at a bit more of a reasonable time for people to be watching on YouTube. That makes so much sense. And it's so interesting to see the payoff for that. Anyway, Fabi, moving on. In this season of the podcast, we are actually interacting with our audience a little bit more. And we publish a poll on Sprout Social's accounts on their LinkedIn and on their Instagram ahead of every episode, just to bring a little bit of something from our listeners into the conversation. So for this episode, we had asked, do you think social media has changed the way we discover new music? Now, I'm interested, what do you reckon the results might have been from that?
That definitely did, yeah. It was probably a huge shift, yeah.
I have to say, I voted in this one, actually. And at the time when I voted, it just said 100% said yes. But actually, the results have come through. And it was only 90%. Obviously, that's still a landslide. But digging into this a little bit more, why do you think that social media has changed the way that we discover new music? And why is this part of presumably Boiler Room's strategy as well?
Well, I think mediums have changed. The world has changed. It's very different to when I was younger. You know, we used to record everything in CDs and then share with your friends, which is not the case anymore. So I think, you know, the content is also there for you to look at. There is a element of discovery, but I think you have to be very headsy and really love music for you to go to the, you know, the Bandcamp and the Discogs and really dig for music, which is not the case with everyone. I think most people, they will listen to whatever is given to them by the platform, so Spotify or TikTok, and you would have the, you know, the sounds that are trending within this week or the other week. But we work with platforms like TikTok and SoundOn, for example, where we put the artists, every release that the artists were doing, they would be sign on with SoundOn so they can get their music discovered as well and also be paid by, you know, by the platforms for the music that they were putting out. And we did the same with Apple Music, which all the sets will be within Apple Music and then all the artists and the producers as well, we would pay fairly.
Well, Fabi, Fred again, we've talked about him a little bit. And again, I have to confess to being a super duper mega fan of Fred again, but he's everywhere these days. And Boiler Room had a huge role in his ascent to fame. Could you tell me about putting together the Fred Again campaign? What did you do and why do you think it was so successful?
Yeah, Fred is great. I think his marketing is absolutely genius as well. His team is super lovely, which I think that was a big part of the campaign. We worked with him very, very closely from the moment that we announced the show to the moment that the broadcast went out. So that synergy between Boiler Room and him and his marketing team was very important for the success of the campaign as a whole. And obviously that moment when the music stopped, it was kind of a gift from the music gods that just came out through that night.
Well, actually, Fabi, can I just cut in just to say I have seen this, but maybe you could describe for our listeners, tell us what happened. So tell us about the show and tell us what happened.
Sure. I mean, if they haven't watched it, they should go to boilerroom.tv and watch it now. but yeah, Fred was playing and there was a man right next to him and he accidentally touched the button, the on button with his elbow. So the music stopped. And, you know, it was a club in South Tottenham. There was 500 people in there. They were all having fun and all of a sudden, completely silent. And Fred was absolutely, his reaction is just gold because instead of, you know, kind of freak out or panicking, he literally just put the music back and gave him a hug and the party continued. So that's why I'm saying, I think it's kind of like, it was a gift, whoever that was, it was a gift because the venue in London was quite, they had a little kind of like a veranda, well, a balcony at the top. So the team and I were upstairs. And when we saw that moment happened, we literally looked at each other and we said, we got something here. We knew it, that there was something there. So we worked with his team. We did billboards right before the set went out because there was a lot of unreleased tracks within that set as well. So we put a billboard right outside the course with the track list. We did some flight posterings around East London as well. And he was within the chat room answering answers from the fans whilst the broadcast was going live. And then it just literally exploded. As soon as that little clip went out, it just became mental and it just became this thing that it was literally everywhere. Mm-hmm. I couldn't keep track of the numbers. I was just like, oh my God, this is like, it was literally everywhere. But I think the main reason why it was so successful, it was the collaboration between Boiler Room and his team.
Yeah. And I love that you've talked about how Fred is really nice as well. And I actually think that moment shows how nice he is. He's a genuinely nice guy. And from my own life, I know that I went to Primavera Sound in 2022 where Fred was playing. And it was a really small room. It was a really small little gig that he had. I mean, it was completely packed, but it was small. Fast forward 1 year to 2023, and he was on the main stage and absolutely everyone was there. And for me, I think that was a really good visualization of how much his career changed within that 1 year as a result of doing this collaboration with you guys. But I know that you also do work with big festivals and brands. You do work with Primavera Sound, but you also work with a whole range of different brands as well. Could you tell us a little bit about how you create those partnerships? What does that look like? And how effective are they for your social media strategy?
So we do have like a roster of festivals that are, you know, some of them have been with us for many, many years, like AVA or Fly Open Air. They're kind of two of my favorites. every year they do really, really well. There's a lot of good moments out of it. The crowd is just insanely good. You know, their vibe is just unmatched. The relationship between all of the festivals, it's, you know, sometimes they come to us, sometimes we go to them. And it's the same with partnerships. We do have bespoke partnerships where, for example, with Ballantines, we always go to very small countries. The one with Luanda, that was with Ballantines, for example, Soweto, Nairobi. And then we had other partners like, for example, Coach or Nike. It goes from partnerships with festivals and also with big brands where the strategy for those ones will be a little bit more bespoke. And then festivals like Primavera, this is our third year now, been there with them for 2 years. And I think it elevates our content, but also the brand, you know, Boiler Room, because we're partnering with such a great festivals like Primavera, who hasn't heard of it? They're everywhere as well. And I think historically, when I used to go, when I was around 16, 17, it was more of an indie festival. And now it has evolved into, you know, hosting DJs and more curated to electronic music. But it is super effective. I think the synergy between both brands, I think is really important that we also help each other, which is another thing within the music industry. It's, you know, if you don't have a collaborative or a community type of led business and mentality, I think it's really hard to cut through.
That's interesting because, I would imagine that's very much a big part of the decision-making process, that sort of both sides get something out of the partnership. Because as you mentioned, you know, you Boiler Room has a huge following as well. And so you have to think about that. So I wonder, I know that you've said that a lot of this is in relation to the festivals, but do you approach the festivals or do the festivals approach you at this stage?
It goes both ways. Sometimes if you really, really like them, we go knock on their door. But sometimes, most of the times, they come to us. So it's both ways.
How much input do the artists that you work with have in your campaigns? Are you able to sort of utilize their individual artistic flair to increase engagement? Or is it something that you and your team kind of control tightly within Boiler Room?
No, artist input for us is really important. You know, we're putting a camera in front of them, which can be very, very nerve-wracking. You know, to me, just being sitting here with you and I know there's a camera filming me, I get nervous. So, you know, to them, it's their craft and it might be their first time. And some of them get incredibly nervous. Others are just very used to it when they've been doing it for such a long time. So their input and, you know, just making sure that they are comfortable, it's incredibly important to us. We have a system where, you know, we give them the opportunity to say, okay, I think this was a big moment for me. I would like to highlight this track within my set. And then we share those moments on social. So for us, it's, you know, the artist is what makes Boiler Room what Boiler Room is. And, you know, at the end of the day, if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be here. So I think, yeah, we just want to make sure that they are comfortable and we use their tone of voice sometimes. We work really close with some of the releases. So like, for example, Chasing Status or 100 Gecs. We've launched a new, it's kind of, well, I mean, it's not a new thing, but for us, it was since last year. We're now announcing the broadcast with trailers. So before it drops, we do a very quick edit of 15, 30 seconds to introduce that, you know, a broadcast, it's four sets altogether. So you have four artists, which are from South Hall or Pacific Islands. And I think that helps kind of elevate it, all the artists, and give them another little bit of airtime on our socials, which can be very difficult to get because we have a lot of content to schedule and to publish.
You've mentioned that some of the artists are sometimes a little bit nervous and then obviously there's some that it's like easy peasy, no problem. Presumably then as well, you've got different artists with different levels of, I would say, maturity with their social media platforms. Do you advise them on sort of how to make the most out of their social media platforms whenever their sets come out? Or do you just kind of let them do their own thing? And likewise, actually, for the people who've got huge social media followings, do you make use of those? Is that part of your deal with the artists?
Yeah, for some of them, we work very close. The bigger ones usually because they have like a big label behind them. So there is more of a heavy lifting work to do there. And then for the smaller ones, you know, I can get some emails from them just to kind of, they just want advice on how to drop their sets within their socials. Should I just put this on TikTok or on Instagram, on Twitter? And we obviously help them out and just recommend what we think it would work for their channels.
We've already established that I am heartbreakingly jealous of your amazing career. And I feel like working in music and working for Boiler Room must be, it feels like it would be so glamorous and so fun. So I'm curious, what do you think are the best bits of your job, but also what are the worst bits?
I will say this, I think this stereotype of working in music being very glamorous, I don't think that we should keep that, you know. It's not Studio 54, it's not Beyoncé's backstage, it's none of that. You know, most of the time when you have that wristband that gives you access to, you know, the backstage area, it's literally behind the boiler in the dark with the camping, with the camping, you know, table next to you with a glass of water and a beer, maybe. There is a side of maybe it might be glamorous because, you know, we get to meet loads of artists and that's really cool. But yeah, I think the best part is to discover new music, being able to chat to artists that I would admire. I used to listen to Chasing Status when I was 70 years old. The fact that I've launched one of their sets on Boiler Room, that to me was just, I was a little teenager and just being like really excited before he came out. But the negative part of it, I would say that it's a very hard industry to cut through. Mm. It's been better now. There's still a lot of, yeah, it's very, very competitive. I know that, you know, if one day I leave Boiler Room, I know there's going to be a queue of 100 people that would like to have my job. So yeah, it's very competitive, but it's also really fun to work on.
What plans do you have for 2024? Because I think I saw something about you restarting the world tour. What does that mean for marketing and social as we move in further into this year?
So we're going to deliver 100 broadcasts this year, which is our new strategy. So we top everything to 100 just to make sure that quality kind of stays the same all around. And then World Tour is the second edition that we do it. I think there's going to be a few more shows being announced as well. And then there's going to be a mixed series around it, going to be a little bit, some bits that I can't really talk too much about it, but they are, but there is a new strategy around each show. And then I mentioned the Pacific series that we're going to launch. I think it's a couple of weeks. The first set is from Rarotonga. I hope I pronounced that well, in New Zealand. So that's gonna look incredibly good. And then, yeah, there's a lot of new artists being booked, big artists being booked as well. So I think this year will be a busy, but a very good one. We are also celebrating, which is a huge thing for us. We're celebrating 10 years with in partnerships with Ballantine's. So that's going to be a huge party.
Oh, that sounds fab. Well, Fabi, I have just one more question that we're asking all of our guests on this season, which is, do you have a consistent strategy or rule that you've noticed is just always effective for successful posts on social? So maybe something that you swear by that you could leave with our listeners.
I think the main thing is consistency, especially for us. We have, every time someone starts to work a boiler room, it takes them quite a while to understand, you know, our social calendar. If I would show that to you, there has 20 different colors. It's, you know, loads of different channels. And I think being consistent when you're publishing and why you're publishing as well, I think is really important. Making sure that the brand is consistent all around, that your tone of voice is also, you know, the same throughout, you know, the whole brand and all the strategy that you have. And then I think also your values are really important, even though, you know, it can be very difficult to get lost in the midst of all the content that you have. And especially when you work for a big company, there's so many things that comes from, you know, from everyone. I think working with socials, it's hard because everyone thinks that they can do it, and you are receiving so much information from, you know, you are the receiving part of the audience, but you're also the last person to get that piece of content before it goes out. So stick to the values of the brand, be that person that will always protect it. And yeah, quality control as well. Proofread everything, which is really important.
I think that was about three bits of advice in one. I really think I can relate to all of that quite specifically. Yeah, that's so good. That's such good advice. Fabi, I have loved talking to you. I am very, very jealous of your job, but this has been so great if you just spend some time to talk to us and let us peek behind the curtain of what goes on at Boiler Room. So thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thank you. That was a pleasure.
You've been listening to Social Creatures with me, Kat Anderson. Many thanks to Fabi for joining me today, and a special thank you to Sprout Social for making this podcast possible. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to let us know on social media at Sprout Social and subscribe to hear other episodes like this wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you again in 2 weeks.